Judge came over and made a speech. Handing me a small silver cup, he said, "Congratulations, son. It was justly won." The tears came rolling. I gathered my dog up in my arms and walked to our tent. Grandpa followed, proudly carrying the cup. That evening, the head judge stepped up on the table. He had a small box in his hand. He shouted, "Over here, men, I have some announcements to make." We all gathered around. In a loud voice, he said, "Gentlemen, the contest will start tonight. I'm sure most of you men have been in these hunts before. For those of you who haven't, I will explain the rules. Each night, 5 sets of dogs will be taken out to hunt. A judge will go along with each pair of hounds. Every morning, the judges will turn in that night's catch. The 2 hounds that tree the most coons will qualify for the championship runoff. The other 4 sets will be eliminated from the hunt. Of course, if there is a tie, both sets will qualify. On the following nights, only those hounds tying the first night's score or getting more will be in the runoff. Now, gentlemen, this hunt must be carried out in a sportsmanlike way. If the coon is treed where he can't be caught, such as in a bluff, it will not be counted. You must catch the coon, skin it, and turn the hide over to your judge. You are allowed to take an axe, a lantern, and a gun with birdshot, which you can use to get a coon out of a tree. 25 sets of hounds have been entered in the hunt. In this box I have 25 cards. Everyone in the contest will now line up for the drawing. The card you draw will tell you what night your hounds are to hunt." Walking along in the line, I noticed the beautiful red coats, the caps, and the soft leather boots worn by the other hunters. I felt out of place in my faded blue overalls, old sheepskin coat, and scuffed and worn shoes, but to the wonderful men it made no difference. They treated me like a man, and even talked to me like a man. When it came my time to draw, my hand was shaking so hard I could hardly get it in the box. Pulling the card out, I saw I had drawn the 4th night. After the hunters had left, we stood around our campfire, sipping strong black coffee and listening to the baying of the hounds. Time after time we heard the tree bark. Once 2 hounds came close to the camp, hot on a trail. We listened to their steady bawling. All at once they stopped. After several minutes of waiting, a hunter said, "You know what? That old coon took to the river and in some way has fooled those dogs." Another one said, "Yes, sir, he sure has." A friendly hunter looked at me and asked, "Do you think he could have fooled your dogs?" Thinking his question over, I said, "You know, sometimes when I am hunting, away back in the mountains or down on the river, I sing a little song I made up myself. One of the verses goes like this. You can swim the river, old Mr. Ringtail, and play your tricks out one by one. It won't do any good, old Mr. Ringtail, my little hand knows everyone." The hunters roared with laughter. Some slapped me on the back. Tired and sleepy, but with a smile on my face, I went off to bed. The next morning, 2 blue tick hounds from the Smoky Mountains of Tennessee came out in the lead with 3 big coons to their credit. The other 4 sets were eliminated. The following morning, all 5 sets of dogs were eliminated. None had even tied the blue ticks, although 2 sets had gotten 2 coons, and one of these had treed a 3rd one in a bluff. That day, while eating dinner, my grandfather asked me if my dogs had ever treed 3 coons in one night. I said, "Yes, 4 different times, but that's all." "Where do you think we should hunt on our night?" Papa asked. I told him if we could get our judge to go with us in the buggy, we would be better off if we could go far down river and get out of the range where other dogs had hunted. He said, "That's a good idea. I'll go to see the judges about it." While I was washing the dishes, Grandpa said, "I think I'll shave." I should have left the tent then, but I wasn't done with my dishwashing. With a pin, Grandpa hung a small mirror on the tent wall. After much snorting, mumbling, and screwing of his face this way and that, the job was completed. Dabbing a little water on his iron gray hair, he reached for his brush and comb. From the corner of my eye, I watched him. I had tried to clean the beautiful brush, but hadn't been able to get all the short red hair from it. With 2 fingers, Grandpa pulled some of the hair from the bristles. Holding it in front of him, he looked it over carefully. Then, bending over close to the mirror, Peeking over his glasses, he inspected his head. Straightening up, he looked at the brush again. Turning around quickly, he looked straight at me and said, "Say, young—" Not waiting for anything more, I scooted for the door. Crawling under the buggy, I lay down between my dogs. I knew he wouldn't be mad at me, but it would be best to stay away for a while. The third night, the blue ticks were tied by two black and tan hounds from the bayou country of Louisiana. All that day I was restless. I prowled through the camp. Every little while I would go and see how old Dan and little Ann were. Once I took two weenies from our groceries. I heated them and gave them to my dogs for a treat. Old Dan swallowed his down in one gulp and looked at me as if to say, "Is that all?" Little Ann ate hers in a ladylike way. I could have sworn I saw a small grin on her face. Grandpa was hopping around like a grasshopper, going here and there. Once passing a tent, I heard his voice. I knew he was bragging about my dogs. I smiled to myself. Another hunter stopped me and asked, "Is it true that your hounds have treed 6 coons in one night, 3 up in one tree? Or is that old man just blowing off steam?" I told him my grandfather had a little steam, but he was the best grandpa a boy ever had. He patted me on the head, turned, and walked away, laughing. In the afternoon, our judge came over and introduced himself. He told us he'd be going with us that night. About sundown, we piled in our buggy and drove a few miles downriver. I noticed other hunters doing the same thing. Everyone was trying to get away from the already hunted territory. It was dark by the time Grandpa stopped. I untied the ropes from my dogs. Little Ann reared up on me and whined. Old Dan walked off a few yards, stretched his body, and dragged his claws through the soft bottom soil. Opening his mouth, he let out one loud bawl and then disappeared in the thick timber. Little Ann was right on his heels. We took off after them. Grandpa got nervous. He said to me, "Don't you think you ought to whoop to him?" I told him to wait a little while. There would be plenty of time for whooping. He snorted and said he thought a hunter always whooped to his dogs. "I do, Grandpa," I said, "but not before they strike a trail." We walked on. Every now and then we would stop and listen. I could hear the loud snuffing of old Dan. Once we caught a glimpse of little Ann as she darted across an opening that was bathed in moonlight. She was as silent as a ghost and as quick as a flitting shadow. Papa said, "It sure is a beautiful night for hunting." The judge said, "You can't beat these Ozark Mountain nights for beauty. I don't care where you go." Grandpa started to say something. His voice was drowned out by the bell-like cry of little Ann. In a whisper, I said, "Come on, Dan. Hurry and help her." As if in answer to my words, his deep voice hammered its way up through the river bottoms. I felt the blood tingling in my veins. That wonderful feeling that only a hunter knows crept over my body. Looking over at Grandpa, I said, "Now you can whoop." Jerking off his hat and throwing back his head, he let out a yell. It wasn't a whoop or a screech. It was about halfway in between. Everyone laughed. The coon was running upriver toward our campground. We turned and followed. I could tell by the dogs' voices that they were running side by side and were hot on the trail. Closing my eyes, I could almost see them running, bodies stretched to their fullest length, legs pounding up and down, white steam rolling from their hot breath in the frosty night. Grandpa got tangled up in some underbrush and lost his hat and spectacles. It took us a while to find the glasses. Papa said something about getting them wired on with baling wire. Grandpa snorted. The judge laughed. The coon crossed the river and ran on upstream. Soon my dogs were out of hearing distance. I told Papa we had better stay on our side of the river and keep going until we could hear them again. 20 minutes later, we heard them coming back. We stopped. "I think they have crossed back to our side," I said. All at once, the voices of my dogs were drowned out by a loud roar. "What in the world was that?" Grandpa said. "I don't know," the judge said. "Reckon it was wind or thunder." About that time, we heard it again. The judge started laughing. "I know now what it is," he said. "Those hounds have run that coon right back by our camp. The noise we heard was the other hunters whooping to them." Everyone laughed. A few minutes later, I heard my dogs bawling treed. On reaching the tree, Papa ran his hand back under his coat. He pulled out Grandpa's gun.
"That's a funny-looking gun," the judge said. "It's a 410-gauge pistol, isn't it?"
"It's the very thing for this kind of work," Papa said.
You couldn't kill a coon with it if you tried, especially if you're using birdshot. All it will do is sting his hide a little.
At the crack of the gun, the coon gave a loud squall and jumped.
My dogs lost no time in killing him. We skinned the coon, and soon were on our way again.
The next time my dogs treed, they were across the river from us. Finding a riffle, we pulled off our shoes and started across. Grandpa very gingerly started picking his way. His tender old feet moved from one smooth rock to another. Everything was fine until we reached midstream, where the current was much swifter. He stepped on a loose, round rock. It rolled, and down he went. As the cold river water touched his body, he let out a yell that could have been heard for miles. He looked so funny, we couldn't keep from laughing. Papa and the judge helped him to his feet. Laughing every step of the way, we finally reached the other side. Grandpa kept going in his wet clothes until we reached the tree where the dogs were. After killing the coon, we built a large fire so Grandpa could dry his clothes. He'd get up as close to the fire as he could and turn this way and that. He looked so funny standing there with his long underwear steaming. I started rolling with laughter. He looked over at me and snapped, "What's so funny?" I said, "Nothing."
"Well, why are you laughing?" he said.
At this remark, Papa and the judge laughed until their eyes watered. Mumbling and grumbling, Grandpa said,
"If you fellas were cold as I am, you wouldn't be laughing."
We knew we shouldn't be laughing, but we couldn't help ourselves. The judge looked at his watch.
"It's after 3 o'clock," he said. "You'd think they'll tree another one?"
As if to throw the words back in the judge's face, old Dan opened up. I stood up and whooped,
"Hoo-wee! Get him, Dan! Get him! Put him up a little tree!"
There was a mad scramble. Grandpa tried to put his breeches on backwards. The judge and Papa ran over to help him with his shoes. Each one tried to put a shoe on the wrong foot. I was laughing so hard I could do nothing. 100 yards from the fire, I realized we had forgotten the coonskins. I ran back for them. My dogs had jumped the coon in swampland. He tore out for the river bottoms. I could tell they were close to him by their fast bawling. All at once, their baying stopped. We stood still and listened. Old Dan bawled tree a few more times and then stopped. Grandpa asked,
"What's happened?"
I told him the coon had probably pulled some kind of trick. Coming up to my dogs, we saw they were working up and down an old rail fence. We stood and watched. Every now and then, old Dan would rear up on a large hackberry tree that was standing about 7 feet from the fence and bawl treed. As yet, little Ann had not bawled the tree bark. We watched her. She was working everywhere. She climbed up on the rail fence and followed its zigzag course until she disappeared in the darkness. I told Papa I was sure the coon had walked the rail fence and in some way had fooled my dogs. Old Dan would keep coming back to the hackberry tree. He would rear up on it and bawl treed. We walked up to him. Looking the tree over, we could see that the coon wasn't in it. The judge said,
"It looks like he has him fooled." "Maybe you had better call them off," Grandpa said. "We can go someplace else and hunt. We got to get one more coon, even if I have to tree it myself."
For some reason, no one laughed at his remark. "It's almost daylight," Papa said. "Yes, that's what has me worried," I said. "We don't have time to do any more hunting. If we lose this one, we're beat." Hearing the word beat, Grandpa began to fidget. He asked me,
"What do you think happened? How did that coon fool them?"
"I don't know for sure," I said. "He walked that rail fence. The hackberry tree has something to do with his trick, but I don't know what."
"Son," the judge said, "I wouldn't feel too badly if I were you. I've seen some of the very best hounds fooled by a smart old coon."
Regardless of all the discouraging talk, the love and belief I had in my little red hounds never faltered. I could see them now and then leaping over old logs, tearing through the underbrush, sniffing and searching for the lost trail. My heart swelled with pride. I whooped, urging them on. In a low voice, the judge said,
"I'll say one thing. They don't give up easily."
Birds began to chirp all around us. The sky took on a light gray color. Tiny, dim stars were blinking the night away.
"It looks like we're beat," Papa said. "It's getting daylight."
At that moment, the loud, clear voice of a red-boned hound, bawling treed, rang through the river bottoms. It was the voice of little Anne. Sucking in a mouthful of air, I held it. I could feel my heart pounding against my ribs. I closed my eyes tight and gritted my teeth to keep the tears from coming.
"Let's go to them," Grandpa said.
"No, wait a minute," I said.
"Why?"
he asked. "Wait till old Dan gets there," I said. "It's daylight now, and if we walk up to the tree, the coon will jump out. It's hard to keep a coon in a tree after daylight. Let's wait until old Dan gets there. Then if he jumps, he won't have a chance to get away."
"The boy's right," the judge said. "It's hard to keep a coon in a tree after daybreak."
Just then we heard old Dan. His deep voice shattered the morning silence. Searching for the lost trail, he had crossed the fence and worked his way out into an old field. Turning around, we saw him coming. He was a red blur in the gray morning shadows. Coming to the rail fence, and without breaking his stride, he raised his body into the air. About halfway over, and while still in the air, he bawled. Hitting the ground with a loud grunt, he ran past us. Everyone whooped to him. Ahead was a deep washout, about 10 feet wide. On the other side was a canebrake. His long red body, stretched to its fullest length, seemed to float in the air as he sailed over it. We could hear the tall stalks rattling as he plowed his way through them. A bunch of sleepy snowbirds rose from the thick cane, flitted over, and settled in a row on the old rail fence. Nearing the tree, we could see it was a tall sycamore. And there, high in the top, was the coon. Grandpa threw a fit. He hopped around, whooping and hollering. He threw his old hat down on the ground and jumped up and down on it. And then he ran over and kissed little Ann right on the head. After we killed and skinned the coon, the judge said,
"Let's walk back to that old fence. I think I know how the old fellow pulled his trick."
Back at the fence, the judge stood and looked around for a few minutes. Smiling, he said,
"Yes, that's how he did it."
"How?"
Grandpa asked.
Still smiling, the judge said,
"That old coon walked this rail fence. Coming even with the hackberry tree, he leaped up on its side and climbed up. Notice how thick the timber is around here. See that limb way up there in the top? The one that runs over and almost touches the sycamore?"
We saw what he meant.
"The coon walked out on that limb," he said, "leaped over and caught the sycamore limb. Repeating this over and over from tree to tree, he worked his way far out into the river bottoms. What I can't figure out is how that hound found him."
Gazing at little Anne, he shook his head and said,
"I've been hunting coons and judging coon hunts for 40 years, but I've never seen anything like that."
He looked at me.
"Well, son," he said, "you have tied the leading teams. There's only one more night of eliminations. Even if some of them get more than 3 coons, you will still be in the runoff, and from what I've seen here tonight, you have a good chance of winning the cup."
I knew that little Ann had scented the coon in the air, the same as she had the ghost coon. I walked over and knelt down by her side. The things I wanted to say to her, I couldn't, for the knot in my throat, but I'm sure she understood. As we came into the campground, the hunters came out of their tents and gathered around us. The judge held up the 3 big coon hides. There was a roar from the crowd. One man said,
"That was the most beautiful sight I've ever seen."
"What was a beautiful sight?"
Grandpa asked.
"Last night, those little red hounds brought that coon right through camp."
The judge said,
"We figured they did when we heard the noise."
Laughing, the man said,
"We heard them when they ran up the other side of the river. Way up above here, they crossed over. We could tell they were coming back, so we doused all the fires, and sure enough, they came right through camp. Those 2 little hounds weren't 50 yards behind the coon, running side by side. Boy, they were picking them up and laying them down and bawling every time their feet touched the ground. I tell you, it was the prettiest sight I ever saw."
When the judge started telling about the last coon little Ann had treed, I took my dogs over to our tent and fed and watered them. After they had had their fill, I gave them a good rub down with a piece of gunny sack. Taking them out to the buggy, I tied them up. I stood and watched while they twisted around in the hay, making their bed. That day, I tried to get some sleep in our tent, but the soaking Grandpa had taken in the river had given him a cold, causing him to snore. I never heard such a racket in all my life. I'd have sworn he rattled the paper sacks in our grocery boxes. Taking a blanket, I went out to my dogs. Little Ann had wriggled up as close to old Dan as she could. Prying them apart, I lay down between them and fell asleep. The last night of the eliminations turned out like the second night. None of the judges turned in more than two hides. That day, about noon, the owners of the other winning teams and I were called for a conference with the head judge. He said, "Gentlemen, the eliminations are over. Only three sets of hounds are left for the runoff. The winner of tonight's hunt will receive the gold cup. If there's a tie for the championship, naturally there will be another runoff." He shook hands with each of us and wished us good luck. Tension began to build up in the camp. Here and there, hunters were standing in small groups, talking. Others could be seen going in and out of tents with rolls of money in their hands. Grandpa was the busiest one of all. His voice could be heard all over the camp. Men were looking at me and talking in low tones. I strutted like a turkey gobbler. That evening, while we were having supper, a hunter dropped by. He had a small box in his hand. Smiling, he said, "Everyone has agreed that we should have a jackpot for the winner. I've been picked to do the collecting." Grandpa said, "You may as well leave it here now." Looking at me, the hunter said, "Son, I think almost every man in this camp is hoping you win it. But it's not going to be easy. You're going to be up against four of the finest hounds there are." Turning to my father, he said, "Did you know the two big Walker hounds have won four gold cups?" Very seriously, Papa said, "You know, I have two mules down on my place. One is almost as big as a barn. The other one isn't much bigger than a jackrabbit. But that little mule can outpull the big one every time." Smiling, the hunter turned to leave. He said, "You could be right." Papa asked me again where I thought we should start hunting. I had been thinking about this all day. I said, "You remember where we jumped the last coon in the swamp?" Papa said, "Yes." "Well, the way I figure, more than one coon lives in that swamp," I said. "It's a good place for them, as there are lots of crawfish and minnows in those potholes. If a hound jumps one there, he has a good chance to tree him." Papa asked, "Why?" "It's a long way back to the river, and about the same distance to the mountains," I said. "Either way he runs, a dog can get pretty close to him, and so he would have to take to a tree." That evening we climbed into Grandpa's buggy and headed for the swamp. It was dark by the time we reached it. Grandpa handed Papa his gun, saying,
"You're getting to be a pretty good shot with this thing."
"I hope I get to shoot it a lot tonight," Papa said. Under my breath, I said, "I do too." After untying the ropes from my dogs, I held onto their collars for a minute. Pulling them up close, I knelt down and whispered, "This is the last night. I know you'll do your best." They seemed to understand and tugged at their collars. When I turned them loose, they started for the timber. Just as they reached the dark shadows, they stopped, turned around, and stared straight at me for an instant. The judge saw their strange actions. Laying a hand on my shoulder, he asked,
"What did they say, son?"
I said, "Nothing that anyone could understand, but I can feel that they know this hunt is important. They know it just as well as you or I." It was little Ann who found the trail. Before the echo of her sharp cry had died away, old Dan's deep voice floated out of the swamp.
"Well, let's go," Papa said eagerly.
"No, let's wait a minute," I said.
"Wait? Why?" Grandpa asked.
"To see which way he's going to run," I said. The coon broke out of the swamp and headed for the river. Listening to my dogs, I could tell they were close to him. I said to Papa, "I don't think he'll ever make it to the river. They're right on his heels now." By the time we had circled the swamp, they were bawling treed. The judge said,
"Boy, that was fast."
I felt my father's hand on my shoulder. Looking at me, he smiled and nodded his head. Papa and I knew I had judged the coon perfectly. He didn't have time to reach the river or the mountains. My dogs had treed the coon in a tall ash, which stood about 50 yards from the river. I knew the 50 yards had saved us a good hour, because he could have pulled trick after trick if he had gotten in the water. We spied the coon in the topmost branches. At the crack of the gun, he ran far out on a limb and jumped. He landed in an old fallen treetop. He scooted through it, Coming out on the other side, he ran for the river. The tangled mass of limbs slowed my dogs, and they all but tore the treetop apart getting out of it. The coon was just one step ahead of them as they reached the river. We heard them hit the water. Running over, we stood and watched the fight. The coon was at home in the river. He crawled up on old Dan's head, trying to force him under. Before he could do it, little Ann reached up and pulled him off. In a scared voice, Papa said, "That water looks deep to me."
"Maybe you had better call them off," said the judge. "That's a big coon, and he could drown one of them easily in that deep water."
"Call them off," I said. "Why, you couldn't whip them off with a stick. There's no use for anyone to get scared. They know exactly what they're doing. I've seen this more times than one." Grandpa was scared and excited. He was jumping up and down, whooping and hollering. Papa raised the gun to aim. I jumped and grabbed his arm. "Don't do that," I yelled. "You're sure to hit one of my dogs."
Round and round in the deep water, the fight went on. The coon climbed on old Dan's head and sank his teeth in one of his long, tender ears. Old Dan bawled with pain. Little Ann swam in and caught one of the coon's hind legs in her mouth. She tried hard to pull him off. All three disappeared under the water. I held my breath. The water churned and boiled. All three came to the top about the same time. The coon was between the bank we were standing on and my dogs. He swam toward us. They caught him again just as he reached shore. He fought his way free and ran for a large sycamore. Old Dan caught him just as he started up. I knew that was the end of the fight. After it was all over and the coon had been skinned, Grandpa said, "I hope we don't have to go through that again tonight. For a while, I sure thought your dogs were goners."
The judge said, "Well, have you ever seen that? Look over there." Old Dan was standing perfectly still with eyes closed and head hanging down. Little Ann was licking at his cut and bleeding ears. "She always does that," I said.
"Thought your dogs were goners."
The judge said, "Well, have you ever seen that? Look over there." Old Dan was standing perfectly still with eyes closed and head hanging down. Little Ann was licking at his cut and bleeding ears. "She always does that," I said. "If you'll watch when she gets done with him, he'll do the same for her." We stood and watched until they had finished doctoring each other. Then, trotting side by side, they disappeared in the darkness. We followed along, stopping now and then to listen. Looking up the sky, Papa said, "Well, that doesn't look good up there. I think we are in for a storm." The sky had turned a dark gray. Fast-moving clouds were rolling through the heavens. Grandpa said,
"It looks like we're going to get some wind, too."
Scared and thinking everyone might want to stop hunting because of a few clouds, I said, "If a storm is brewing, it's a good night to hunt. All game stirs just before a storm." 30 minutes later, Papa said, "Listen." We stood still. A low moaning sound could be heard in the tops of the tall sycamores.
Grandpa said,
"I was afraid of that. We're going to get some wind."
We heard a rattling in the leaves and underbrush. It was beginning to sleet. The air turned cold and chilly. From far down river, we heard the deep baying of a hound on a trail. It was old Dan. Seconds later, the rhythmic crying of little Ann could be heard. Swallowing the lump that had jumped up in my throat, I whooped as loud as I could. The ground was turning white with sleet. The storm had really set in. We hurried along. I said to Papa, "If this keeps up, that old coon won't run long. He'll head for his den."
"If it gets much worse," Grandpa said, "I know some coon hunters that won't be running very long. They'll be frozen, too stiff to run."
The judge asked if there was any danger of getting lost.
"I don't know," Papa said. "It's all strange country to me."
My dogs' voices sounded far away. I knew they were much closer than they sounded as they were downwind from us. Finding three large sycamores growing close together, we stopped on the leeward side. Papa shouted above the wind,
"I don't know if we can take much more of this."
"It's bad," Grandpa replied, "and it looks like it's going to get worse."
"You can't see over 15 feet now," the judge said. "Do you think we can find the buggy?"
"I think we can find the buggy, all right," Papa said.
I could no longer hear the voices of my dogs. This had me worried. I didn't want to leave them out in the storm.
"Can anyone hear the hounds?"
Grandpa asked.
"I can't," Papa said.
The judge spoke up.
"Fellas, I think we'd better go in," he said. "There's no telling where they are. They may have crossed the river."
Scared and knowing I had to do something, I said, "They're closer than you think, probably treed. By now you can't hear them for this wind." I begged, "Let's go a little further." There was no reply, and no one made a move to leave the shelter of the trees. Taking a few steps, I said, "I'll take the lead. Just follow me."
"Billy, we couldn't find them," Papa said. "You can't see or hear a thing. We had better start back for camp."
"I think so, too," the judge said.
At this remark, I cried, "I have been out in storms like this before all by myself. I've never left my dogs in the woods, and I am not going to now, even if I have to look for them by myself."
No one answered.
"Please go just a little further," I begged. "I just know we'll hear them."
Still no one spoke or made a move to go on. Stepping over to my father, I buried my face in his old Mackinaw coat. Sobbing, I pleaded with him not to turn back. He patted my head.
"Billy," he said, "a man could freeze to death in this storm. And besides, your dogs will give up and come in."
"That's what has me worried," I cried. "They won't come in. They won't, Papa. Little Ann might, but not old Dan. He'd die before he'd leave a coon in a tree."
Papa was undecided. Making up his mind, he stepped away from the tree and said to the others, "I'm going on with him. You fellas coming or going back?" He turned and followed me. Grandpa and the judge fell in behind him. By this time, the ground was covered with a thin white layer of sleet. We kept slipping and falling. I could hear Grandpa mumbling and grumbling. The wind-driven sleet stung our skin like thousands of pricking needles. Strong gusts of wind growled and moaned through the tops of the tall timber. Once, during a momentary lull of the storm, I thought I heard the baying of a hound. I told my father I thought I had heard old Dan.
"From which direction?" he asked.
"From that way," I said, pointing to our left.
We started on. A few minutes later, Papa stopped. He shouted to my grandfather,
"Did you hear anything?"
"No," Grandpa shouted back. "I can't hear anything in this storm."
"I thought I did, but I'm not sure," the judge said.
"Where was it coming from?" Papa asked.
"Over that way," the judge said, pointing to our right.
"That's the way it sounded to me," Papa said.
At that moment, all of us heard the deep voice of old Dan.
"It sounds as if they're close," Grandpa said.
"Let's split up," said the judge. "Maybe one of us can find them."
"No," Papa said. "It'd be easy to get lost in this storm."
"I think they're more to the right of us," I said.
"I do too," Papa said.
We trudged on. Old Dan bawled again. The sound of his voice seemed to be all around us.
"The way that wind is whipping the sound through this timber," the judge said, "we'd be lucky if we ever found them."
Papa shouted over the roar of the wind,
"We can't take much more of this. We'll freeze to death."
The men were giving up. I felt the knot again as it crawled up in my throat. Salt water froze on my eyelashes. Kneeling down, I put my ear close to the icy ground in hopes I could hear my dogs, but I couldn't hear anything above the roar of the blizzard. Standing up, I peered this way and that. All I could see was a white wall of whirling sleet. I closed my eyes and said a silent prayer and hoped for a miracle. We heard a sharp crack and a loud crashing noise. A large limb, torn from a tree by the strong wind, fell to the ground. The sharp crack of the limb gave me an idea. Shouting to my father, I said,
"Shoot the gun! If my dogs are close enough to hear it, maybe little Ann will come to us."
Papa didn't hesitate. Pointing the gun high over his head, he pulled the trigger. The sharp crack rang out into the teeth of the storm. We waited. Just when I had given up all hope and had sunk to the lowest depth of despair, out of the white wall of driving sleet, my little dog came to me. I knelt down and gathered her in my arms. Taking one of the lead ropes from my pocket, I tied it to her collar. I said, "Find him, little girl. Please find old Dan." Right then, I didn't care about coons, gold cups, or anything. All I wanted was my dogs. I don't know how she did it. Straight into the face of the storm, she led us. Time after time, she would stop and turn her head this way and that. I knew she couldn't scent or see anything. Instinct alone was guiding her. Over a winding and twisting trail, we followed. Coming out of the bottom, she led us into a thick canebrake. The tall stalk sheltered us from the storm. The roaring of the wind didn't seem as loud. Like ghostly figures, large trees loomed out of the almost solid mass. Falling and stumbling, we kept pushing on. Grandpa shouted,
"Hold up a minute. I'm just about all in."
We stopped.
"Do you think that hound knows what she's doing?" the judge asked. "Maybe we just running around in circles."
Looking at me, Papa said,
"I hope she does. Some of these cane brakes cover miles. If we get lost in here, we'd be in bad shape."
Grandpa said,
"I think we've gone too far. The last time I heard old Dan, he sounded quite close."
"That was because the wind carried the sound," I said. The judge spoke up.
"Fellas, no dog is worth the lives of three men. Now let's do the smart thing and get out of here while we can. Our clothes are wet. If we keep on wandering around in this jungle, we'll freeze to death. It doesn't look like this blizzard is ever going to let up."
I could hear the roar of the blizzard back in the thick timber of the bottoms. Two large limbs being rubbed together by the strong wind made a grinding, creaking sound. The tall, slender cane around us rattled and swayed. I could feel the silence closing in. I knew the judge's cold logic had had its effect on my father and grandfather. The men had given up. There was no hope left for me. Kneeling down, I put my arms around little Anne. I felt the warm heat from her moist tongue caressing my ear. Closing my eyes, I said, "Please, Dan, bawl one more time, just one more time." I waited for my plea to be answered. With its loud roaring, the north wind seemed to be laughing at us. All around, tall stalks of cane were weaving and dancing to the rattling rhythm of their knife-edged blades. My father tried to talk above the wind, but his words were lost in the storm. Just before another blast, clear as a foghorn on a stormy sea, old Dan's voice rang loud and clear. It seemed louder than the roar of the wind or the skeleton-like rustling of the tall, swaying cane. I jumped to my feet. My heart did a complete flip-flop. The knot in my throat felt as big as an apple. I tried to whoop, but it was no use. Little Anne bawled and tugged on the rope. There was no mistaking the direction. We knew that little Anne had been right all along, straight as an arrow she had led us to him. Old Dan was treed down in a deep gully. I slid off the bank and ran to him. His back was covered with a layer of frozen sleet. His frost-covered whiskers stood out straight as porcupine quills. I worked the wedges of ice from between his toes and scraped the sleet from his body with my hands. Little Ann came over and tried to wash his face. He didn't like it. Jerking loose from me, he ran over to the tree, reared up on it, and started bawling. Hearing shouting from the bank above me, I looked up. I could dimly see Papa and the judge through the driving sleet. At first I thought they were shouting to me, but on peering closer I could see that they had their backs to me. Catching hold of some long stalks of cane that were hanging down from the steep bank, I pulled myself up. Papa shouted in my ear, "Something has happened to your grandfather." Turning to the judge, he said, "He was behind you. When was the last time you saw him?"
"I don't know for sure," the judge said. "I guess it was back there where we heard the hound bawl."
"Didn't you hear anything?" Papa asked.
"Hear anything?" the judge exclaimed. "How could I hear anything in all that noise? I thought he was behind me all the time and didn't miss him until we got here."
I couldn't hold back the tears. My grandfather was lost and wandering in that white jungle of cane. Screaming for him, I started back. Papa caught me. He shouted, "Don't do that!" I tried to tear away from him, but his grip on my arm was firm.
"Shoot the gun," the judge said.
Papa shot time after time. It was useless. We got no answer. Little Anne came up out of the washout. She stood and stared at me. Turning, she disappeared quickly in the thick cane. Minutes later, we heard her. It was a long, mournful cry. The only times I had ever heard my little dog bawl like that were when she was baying at a bright Ozark moon, or when someone played a French harp or a fiddle close to her ear. She didn't stop until we reached her. Grandpa lay as he had fallen, face down in the icy sleet. His right foot was wedged in the fork of a broken box elder limb. When the ankle had twisted, the searing pain must have made him unconscious. Papa worked Grandpa's foot free and turned him over. I sat down and placed his head in my lap. While Papa and the judge massaged his arms and legs, I wiped the frozen sleet from his eyes and face. Burying my face in the iron-gray hair, I cried and begged God not to let my grandfather die.
"I think he's gone," the judge said.
"I don't think so," Papa said.
"He took a bad fall when that limb tripped him, but he hadn't been lying here long enough to be frozen. I think he's just unconscious."
Papa lifted him to a sitting position and told the judge to start slapping his face. Grandpa moaned and moved his head.
"He's coming around," Papa said.
I asked Papa if we could get him back to the gully where old Dan was. I had noticed there was very little wind there, and we could build a fire.
That's the very place, he said. We'll build a good fire, and one of us can go for help.
Papa and the judge made a seat by catching each other's wrists. They eased Grandpa between them.
By the time we reached the washout, Grandpa was fully conscious again and was mumbling and grumbling. Couldn't see why they had to carry him like a baby.
After easing him over the bank and down into the gully, we built a large fire. Papa took his knife and cut the boot from Grandpa's swollen foot. Grandpa grunted and groaned from the pain. I felt sorry for him, but there was nothing I could do but look on. Papa examined the foot. Shaking his head, he said, "Boy, that's a bad one. It's either broken or badly sprained. I'll go for some help." Grandpa said,
"Now wait just a minute. I'm not going to let you go out in that blizzard by yourself. What if something happens to you? No, no."
"What time is it?" he asked. The judge looked at his watch. "It's almost 5 o'clock," he said.
"It's not long till daylight," Grandpa said. "Then if you want to go, you can see where you're going. Now help me get propped up against this bank. I'll be all right. It doesn't hurt any more. It's numb now."
"He's right," the judge said.
"Think you can stand it?" Papa asked. Grandpa roared like a bear.
"Sure I can stand it. It's nothing but a sprained ankle. I'm not going to die. Build that fire up a little more."
While Papa and the judge made Grandpa comfortable, I carried wood for the fire.
"There's no use standing around gawking at me," Grandpa said. "I'm all right. Get the coon out of that tree. That's what we came for, isn't it?"
Up until then, the coon hunting had practically been forgotten. The tree was about 30 feet from our fire. We walked over and took a good look at it for the first time. My dog, seeing we were finally going to pay some attention to them, started bawling and running around the tree. Papa said,
"It's not much of a tree, just an old box elder snag. There's not a limb on it." "I can't see any coon," said the judge. "It must be hollow."
Papa beat on its side with the axe. It gave forth a loud booming sound. He said,
"It's hollow, all right."
He stepped back a few steps, scraped his feet on the slick ground for a good footing, and said,
"Stand back and hold those hounds. I'm going to cut it down. We need some wood for our fire anyway."
Squatting down between my dogs, I held on to their collars. Papa notched the old snag so it would fall away from our fire. As the heavy axe chewed its way into the tree, it began to lean and crack. Papa stopped chopping. He said to the judge,
"Come on and help me. I think we can push it over now."
After much grunting and pushing, snapping and popping, it fell. I turned my dogs loose. On hitting the ground, the snag split and broke up. Goggle-eyed, I stood rooted in my tracks and watched 3 big coons roll out of the busted old trunk. One started up the washout, running between us and the fire. Old Dan caught him, and the fight was on. The second coon headed down the washout. Little Ann caught him. Hearing a loud yell from Grandpa, I looked that way. Old Dan and the coon were fighting close to his feet. He was yelling and beating at them with his hat. The judge and Papa ran to help. The third coon started climbing up the steep bank close to me. Just before reaching the top, his claws slipped in the icy mud. Tumbling end over end, down he came. I grabbed up a stick and threw it at him. Growling and showing his teeth, he started for me. I threw the fight to him then and there. Some 10 yards away, I looked back. He was climbing the bank. That time he made it and disappeared in the thick cane. Hearing a squall of pain from little Ann, I turned. The coon was really working her over. He had climbed up on her back and was tearing and slashing. She couldn't shake him off. Grabbing a club from the ground, I ran to help her. Before we had killed our coon, old Dan came tearing in. We stood and watched the fight. When the coon was dead, Papa picked it up and we walked back to the fire.
"How many coons were in that old snag?" Papa asked.
"I saw 3, I said. "The one that got away climbed out over there." I pointed in the direction the coon had taken. I never should have pointed. My dogs turned as one and started bawling and clawing their way up the steep bank. I shouted and scolded, but to no avail. They disappeared in the rattling cane. We stood still, listening to their voices. The sound died away in the roaring storm. Sitting down close to the fire, I buried my face in my arms and cried. I heard the judge say to my father,
"This beats anything I've ever seen. Why, those dogs can read that boy's mind.
He just pointed at that bank, and away they went. I never saw anything like it. I can't understand some of the things they have done tonight. Hounds usually aren't that smart. If they were collies or some other breed of dog, it would be different, but they're just red-bone hounds, hunting dogs. Papa said, "Yes, I know what you mean. I've seen them do things that I couldn't understand. I'd never heard of hounds that ever had any affection for anyone, but these dogs are different. Did you know they won't hunt with anyone but him, not even me?" Hearing my grandfather call my name, I went over and sat down by his side. Putting his arm around me, he said,
"Now, I wouldn't worry about those dogs. They'll be all right. It's not long till daylight, then you can go to them."
I said, "Yes, but what if the coon crosses the river? My dogs will follow him. If they get wet, they could freeze to death."
"We'll just have to wait and hope for the best," he said. "Now straighten up and quit that sniffling. Act like a coon hunter. You don't see me bawling, and this old foot is paining me something awful."
I felt better after my talk with Grandpa.
"Come on, let's skin these coons," Papa said.
I got up to help him. After the skins were peeled from the carcasses, I had an idea. Holding one up close to the fire until it was warm, I took it over and wrapped it around Grandpa's foot. Chuckling, he said,
"Boy, that feels good. Heat another skin the same way."
I kept it up for the rest of the night. Just before dawn, the storm blew itself out with one last angry roar. It started snowing. A frozen silence settled over the canebrake. Back in the thick timber of the river bottoms, the sharp snapping of frozen limbs could be heard. The tall stalks of wild cane looked exhausted from the hellish night. They were drooping and bending from the weight of the frozen sleet. I climbed out of the deep gully and listened for my dogs. I couldn't hear them. Just as I started back down the bank, I heard something. I listened. Again I heard the sound. Papa was watching me.
"Can you hear the dogs?" he asked.
"No, not the dogs," I said, "but I can hear something else."
"What does it sound like?" he asked.
"Like someone whooping," I said. Papa and the judge hurried up the bank. We heard the sound again. It was coming from a different direction. "The first time I heard it," I said, "it was over that way."
"It's the men from camp," the judge said. "They're searching for us."
We started whooping. The searchers answered. Their voices came from all directions. The first one to reach us was Mr. Kyle. He looked haggard and tired. He asked if everything was all right.
"Yes, we're all right," Papa said, "but the old man has a bad ankle. Looks like we'll have to carry him out." "Your team broke loose and came back to camp about midnight," Mr. Kyle said. "This really spooked us. We were sure something bad had happened. 25 of us have been searching since then."
Several men climbed down the bank and went over to Grandpa. They looked at his ankle. One said,
"I don't think he's broken, but it sure is a bad sprain."
"You're in luck," another one said. "We have one of the best doctors in the state of Texas in our camp, Dr. Charlie Lathman. He'll have you fixed up in no time."
"Yes," another said, "and if I know Charlie, he's probably got a small hospital with him."
Back in the crowd, I heard another man say,
"You mean that Lathman fellow who owns those black and tan hounds is a doctor?"
"Sure is," another said. "One of the best."
Mr. Kyle asked where my dogs were. I told him they were treed somewhere.
"What do you mean, treed somewhere?" he asked.
Papa explained what had happened. With a wide-eyed look on his face, he said,
"Do you mean to tell me those hounds stayed with the tree in that blizzard?"
I nodded.
Looking at me, he said, "Son, I hope they have that coon treed, because you need that one to win the cup. Those two Walker hounds caught 3 before the storm came up. When it got bad, all the hunters came in."
The judge spoke up.
"I'll always believe that those hounds knew that boy needed another coon to win," he said. "If you fellas had seen some of the things those dogs have done, you'd believe it, too."
One hunter walked over to the broken snag.
3 out of 1 tree," he said. "No wonder. Look here, that old snag was half full of leaves and grass. Why, it was a regular old den tree."
Several of the men walked over. I heard one say,
"I've seen this happen before. Remember that big hunt in the Red River Bottoms when the 2 little beagle hounds treed 4 coons in an old holler snag? They won the championship, too."
"I wasn't there, but I remember reading about it," one said.
Say, I don't see Benson, Mr. Kyle said.
The men started looking at each other.
He was searching farther downriver than the rest of us, one fellow said. Maybe he didn't hear us shouting.
Some of the men climbed out of the gully. They started whooping. From a distance, we heard an answering shout.
He hears us, someone said. He's coming.
Everyone looked relieved. Mr. Benson struck the washout a little way above us. He was breathing hard, as if he'd been running. He started talking as soon as he was within hearing distance.
It scared me when I first saw them, he said. I didn't know what they were. They looked like white ghosts. I've never seen anything like it.
A hunter grabbed Mr. Benson by the shoulder, shaking him.
Get a hold of yourself, man, he said. What are you talking about?
Mr. Benson took a deep breath to control himself and started again in a much calmer voice.
Those two hounds, he said. I found them. They're frozen solid. They're nothing but white ice from the tips of their noses to the ends of their tails.
Hearing Mr. Benson's words, I screamed and ran to my father. Everything started whirling around and around. I felt light as a feather. My knees buckled. I knew no more. Regaining consciousness, I opened my eyes and could dimly see the blurry images of the men around me. A hand was shaking me. I could hear my father's voice, but I couldn't understand his words. Little by little, the blackness faded away. My throat was dry, and I was terribly thirsty. I asked for some water. Mr. Benson came over. He said,
Son, I'm sorry, truly sorry. I didn't mean it that way. Your dogs are alive. I guess I was excited. I'm very sorry.
I heard a deep voice say,
That's a hell of a thing to do, come running in here saying the dogs are frozen solid.
Mr. Benson said, I didn't mean it to sound that way. I said I'm sorry. What more do you want me to do?
The deep voice growled again.
I still think it was a hell of a thing for a man to do.
Mr. Kyle took over. Now, let's not have any more of this, he said. We have work to do. We've been standing here acting like a bunch of school kids. All this time, that old man has been lying there suffering. A couple of you men cut two poles and make a stretcher to carry him.
While the men were getting the poles, Papa heated the coonskins again and rewrapped Grandpa's foot. With belts and long leather laces from their boots, the hunters made a stretcher. Very gently, they put Grandpa on it.
Again, Mr. Kyle took command.
Part of us will start for camp with him, he said. The others will go after the dogs.
Here, take this gun, Papa said. I'll go with him.
Looking at me, Mr. Kyle said,
Come on, son. I want to see your hounds.
Mr. Benson led the way.
As soon as we get out of this cane, he said, we may be able to hear them. They have the coon treed and a big black gum tree. You're going to see a sight. Now, I mean a sight. They've walked a ring around that tree, cleared down through the ice and snow. You can see the bare ground.
Wonder why they did that, someone asked.
I don't know, Mr. Benson replied, unless they ran in that circle to keep from freezing to death or to keep the coon in the tree.
I figured I knew why my dogs were covered with ice. The coon had probably crossed the river, maybe several times. Old Dan and little Ann would have followed him. They had come out of the river with their coats dripping wet, and the freezing blast of the blizzard had done the rest. Nearing the tree, we stopped and stared.
Did you ever see anything like that? Mr. Benson asked. When I first saw them, I thought they were white wolves.
My dogs hadn't seen us when we came up. They were trotting round and round. Just as Mr. Benson had said, we could see the path they had worn down through the ice and snow till the bare black earth was visible. Like ghostly white shadows, around and around they trotted. In a low voice, someone said, They know that if they stop, they'll freeze to death.
It's unbelievable, said Mr. Kyle. Come on, we must do something quick.
With a choking sob, I ran for my dogs. On hearing our approach, they sat down and started bawling treed. I noticed their voices didn't have that solid ring. Their ice-covered tails made a rattling sound as they switched this way and that on the icy ground. A large fire was built. Standing my dogs close to the warm heat, the gentle hands of the hunters went to work. With handkerchiefs and scarves heated steaming hot, little by little the ice was thawed from their bodies.
If they had ever lain down, someone said, they would have frozen to death.
They knew it, another said. That's why they kept running in that circle.
"What I can't understand is why they stayed with the tree," Mr. Benson said. "I've seen hounds stay with a tree for a while, but not in a northern blizzard."
"Men," said Mr. Kyle, "people have been trying to understand dogs ever since the beginning of time. One never knows what they'll do. You can read every day where a dog saved the life of a drowning child or lay down his life for his master. Some people call this loyalty. I may be wrong, but I call it love, the deepest kind of love."
After these words were spoken, a thoughtful silence settled over the men. The mood was broken by the deep, growling voice I had heard back in the washout.
"It's a shame that people all over the world can't have that kind of love in their hearts," he said. "There would be no wars, slaughter, or murder, no greed or selfishness. It would be the kind of world that God wants us to have, a wonderful world."
After all the ice was thawed from my dogs and their coats were dried out, I could see they were all right. I was happy again and felt good all over. One of the hunters said, "Do you think those hounds are thawed out enough to fight a coon?"
"Sure. Just run him out of that tree," I said.
At the crack of the gun, the coon ran far out on a big limb and stopped. Again the hunter sprinkled him with birdshot. This time he jumped. Hitting the ground, he crouched down.
Old Dan made a lunge. Just as he reached him, the coon sprang straight up and came down on his head. Holding on with his claws, the coon sank his teeth in a long, tender ear. Old Dan was furious. He started turning in a circle, bawling with pain. Little Ann was trying hard to get a hold of the coon, but she couldn't. Because of his fast circling, old Dan's feet flew out from under him, and he fell. This gave little Ann a chance. Darting in, her jaws closed on the back of the coon's neck. I knew the fight was over.
Arriving back at camp, I saw that all the tents had been taken down but ours. A hunter said,
"Everyone was in a hurry to get out before another blizzard sets in."
Papa told me to take my dogs into the tent, as Grandpa wanted to see them. I saw tears in my grandfather's eyes as he talked to them. His ankle was wrapped in bandages. His foot and toes were swollen to twice their normal size. They had turned a greenish-yellow color. Placing my hand on his foot, I could feel the feverish heat. Dr. Lathman came over.
"Are you ready to go now?" he asked.
Snorting and growling, Grandpa said, "I told you I wasn't going anywhere until I see the gold cup handed to this boy."
Turning to face the crowd, Dr. Lathman said,
"Men, let's get this over. I want to get this man to town. That's one of the meanest sprains I've ever seen, and it should be in a cast, but I don't have any plaster of Paris with me."
The hunter who had come by our tent collecting the jackpot money came up to me. Handing me the box, he said,
"Here you are, son. There's over $300 in this box. It's all yours."
Turning to the crowd, he said,
"Fellas, I can always say this. On this hunt, I've seen two of the finest little coon hounds I ever hope to see."
There was a roar of approval from the crowd. Looking down, I saw the box was almost full of money. I was shaking all over. I tried to say thanks, but it was only a whisper. Turning, I handed the box to my father. As his rough old hands closed around it, I saw a strange look come over his face. He turned and looked at my dogs.
Some of the men started shouting, "Here it is!"
The crowd parted and the judge walked through. I saw the gleaming metal of the gold cup in his hand. After a short speech, he handed it to me, saying,
"Son, this makes me very proud. It's a great honor to present you with this championship cup."
The crowd exploded. The hunter's shouts were deafening. I don't know from where the two silly old tears came. They just squeezed their way out. I felt them as they rolled down my cheeks. One dropped on the smooth surface of the cup and splattered. I wiped it away with my sleeve. Turning to my dogs, I knelt down and showed the cup to them. Little Ann licked it.
Old Dan sniffed one time and then turned his head away. The judge said,
"Son, there's a place on the cup to engrave the names of your dogs. I can take it into Oklahoma City and have it done, or you can have it done yourself. The engraving charge has already been paid by the association."
Looking at the cup, it seemed that far down in the gleaming shadows I could see two wide blue eyes glued to a window pane. I knew that my little sister was watching the road and waiting for our return. Looking back at the judge, I said, "If you don't mind, I'll take it with me. My grandfather can send it in for me." Laughing, he said,
"That's all right."
Handing me a slip of paper, he said,
"This is the address where you should send it."
Grandpa said,
"Now that that's settled, I'm ready to go to town."
Turning to Papa, he said,
"You'll have to bring the buggy, and I wish you'd look after my stuff."